This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Is there a problem with the lack of women in San Antonio leadership positions? The numbers tell the story. Looking at the local city commissions and boards, there are 84 boards, 8 are exclusively male. Overall, it breaks down to 60% males, 36% female, and there are some unfilled seats. Also, in local education leadership, it's almost entirely men in the local superintendent positions, and women are still facing challenges finding their place in the tech industry. So, what's the problem here? Why does this lack of parity still exist in our world? What needs to happen to fix this? We ask you to call in with your stories, with your observation, your questions. The number is 210-614-8980. Has this happened to you? What's your barrier to keeping you from leading in San Antonio? 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Shirley Gonzalez, the City Council representative for District 5. Also with us is Sharon Ross, the president of the Texas Council of Women School Executives and retired superintendent. And Barbara Hewitt is with us, a spokesperson for the San Antonio Women in Technology Group and assistant professor in the Department of Health Information Management at Texas State University. And welcome all of you. It's great to have you here, and happy Fiesta. It's great to have you here, Shirley Gonzalez.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So you really are a leading voice in asking why this is, looking at the situation we have in San Antonio and demanding some reasoning, accountability, and asking for change, right?
That's right.
So what are you seeing?
Well, we have so many qualified women in the city. I meet them every day, everywhere I go. And of course, at City Hall, working at staff at the city. But we continue to see this disparity, especially in our boards and commissions that are primarily appointed positions by the city council. And so I recently circulated a CCR, again, a council consideration request. This is the second time I've issued it. I issued it about a year and a half ago, asking for the same concerns. We have had no changes in the complexion of our boards and commissions. They still tend to be primarily male. So I circulated it again, hoping to push it beyond the governance committee and then into a council for a vote, where we are requiring that our boards and commissions be more diverse.
So when you first asked this question, it was a different city hall at the time, different city council?
It was a different city council. We were, it's about 2 years ago, and so we've had six new council members, many whom are more receptive to this kind of idea. And so I'm looking forward to their support and moving this forward.
So are we in an exploratory mode, trying to figure out what the situation is and why it may be this way and looking for solutions, or are we ready asking for, we want a solution?
We want a solution. I think we're way beyond asking for studies. We demand action. And so I'm looking forward to having that discussion with my colleagues. I think everyone can agree that there are many qualified women able to serve. Part of it is the issue of recruiting and how we do that. Part of it is just the availability of positions and really getting women where they are. And so we've got to change our marketing strategy and how we do that. We've typically done it through traditional channels, but getting women to the areas where they are most likely to spend their time, like in mom blogs, for example, or in their school settings, for example. We have lots of very strong women in PTAs, but yet none of them serving in our city boards and commissions. So we have to meet women where they are, and I think that's the distinction. We haven't done that, and even still, in 2018, we haven't changed it.
So what kind of solution are you looking for?
Part of it is we're going to make requirements. We've done it in other boards and commissions where we required certain skill sets in some of our boards and commissions. So I think we can do the same thing, just requiring that 50% of them be women.
So all boards and commissions in San Antonio would have to be made up of half women and half men?
Yes, at least.
We
can have 100% women on boards, too. We wouldn't be opposed to that.
Okay, so you'd be okay with 100% women, but not 100% men.
Oh, well, I was just trying to
okay.
give an example, but we would just want to see more gender equity in our boards and commissions.
And,
so,
and that would be per board and commission, not overall adding up all of the numbers together. You would want to see. So there's like a board for the mayor's commission on women's status in San Antonio. That one right now is all women. So would that one have to be women and men?
No, as it should be. But, you know, the example came up with the CPS board, where we have only men serving on that board.
Right. And that's one that impacts everyone in San Antonio.
That's right. The mayor's commission on the status of women should be women, as we are, as the title implies. But it's very few that are like that, and that's the only one that I can think of where you would have only women serving on that board. So we're looking for gender equity across the board.
Can you address, for some people who are that says, yeah, I understand this makes sense, but can you talk about why having more female representation in these boards and commissions, and even on city council, we have 3 of 10 seats that are occupied by women. Having greater representation by women creates better governance.
Well, it does, because we represent, first of all, the majority of people are women, around 53% women in the city. And we bring a different perspective. So as I was preparing for today, for our meeting today, I was thinking about how, what does prevent women from participating? And the one issue that comes up very often is childcare. And so how do we make sure that we have childcare? We will often give people a parking pass or give them an easy way to access parking, but we don't give them an easy way to take care of their children. And so it could be just that simple. Can we pull together a pot of money so that we have somebody offering childcare on site for a meeting, for example? That's something that we could do very easily for some of our boards that meet after hours.
So are you saying that to the point of the question about having greater female representation on these boards and commissions is that, you know, you said 53% of San Antonio is female, that by having that representation that they understand the issues and challenges that women face every day, and one of them is dealing with childcare, and maybe we could come up with better solutions for that and other issues that women demand locally.
That's right. And also just the issue of recruitment. So if you have mostly men on a board, you're more likely to recruit other men to serve with you.
So networking situation.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's we'll get to that in a second. What would it take? Would we just a charter change or just a rule change? The city council could do this on their own. Is this something that needs to be a permanent deal? Because city councils come and go, and who knows what the next one will bring. What do you want to see? How permanent of a rule would this be?
It should be permanent, and it should be long term.
So that would be a charter.
It could be a charter. I don't know that it needs to be a charter. It could be something that an ordinance that the council moves forward. It doesn't have to be a charter change. You know, the idea is once we have more women in place, we know that trend will continue.
All right. Well, phone lines are open. We're talking about women leadership in San Antonio. If you're a woman, why aren't you leading? What's holding you back? We have plenty qualified women in San Antonio. Our city manager is a woman,
that's
you
right.
know, and she's, but is that enough? Obviously not. We need more. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. We've got some callers on the deck. We'll get them on this next segment. This is The Source. Stay tuned. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about women in leadership in San Antonio. We're speaking with Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 City Councilwoman. Let's go to Sharon Ross, the president of the Texas Council of Women Schools Executives, Women School Executives, and she's a retired superintendent. So Sharon Ross, welcome to The Source. Can you talk about we saw a photograph recently, and it showed the superintendents of San Antonio, and it was all men. We know we have one locally, I think at Fort Sam ISD, but it's really mostly men. Is that a situation that you would see across Texas, or how does that break down?
There certainly are. Thank you for having me on the show. There certainly are more men in superintendent positions across the state of Texas. We are seeing a rise in women. However, that is something that needs to be addressed, that should be addressed. And I think part of that, as my fellow cohort said, is the fact that we need to get more women at the table. Part of our organization's charge is recruiting, empowering, mentoring so that women are equipped to go to the table. And when you look at women in school leadership, you also have to look at their boards. And we were talking about boards earlier, and certainly some board members have embraced the fact that women are effective leaders. There are some women who are effective, some who are not. But those who are, they have to have a seat at the table to present themselves as well. So we have to make sure that boards understand that women can lead schools, large and small, just as a man can.
So do you think this is a perception issue? So you look at ways many ISDs are set up. A lot of the assistant superintendents are women, but it's the boards, the school boards, elected school boards, the trustees that hire the superintendent. And you think they just have a bias that they favor men because of society?
Some do, yes. We've seen gender biases in situations and, unforeseen barriers. There are some women who will say, we need a man in leadership, only to find out when they do get a woman who is a woman of her word and character and can lead and understand curriculum and instruction, finance, bond issues and things like that, then they're okay after the fact. But before, there is a question, and that perception is there, about the qualifications and the experience of a woman, the expectations. Can she do it? Can she stand up to the fight or not? You know, the daily task of going out into the public, speaking to different organizations, can she stand up to the long hours? And the answer is yes. We've seen it time and time again.
Can you talk about how having a woman in as a superintendent, what that means for a school district? Sometimes it's a man, sometimes it's a woman, but if it's always a man, what does that say?
When you look at across the state, yes, there have been districts who've never hired a woman before. And again, it goes back to the gender biases. When you have a woman, and I can tell you based on the fact that I am a woman who has been a superintendent in two districts in the state of Texas, I am connected with the Texas Council of Women School Executives. I am the president, and we do have a large amount of our women who are very active. Those women get up early in the morning and they do the same thing that a man would do. I've been on top of a roof before to see the problems that we've had so that I can present the information along with my director of operations to the board. Some people say, and I remember one person saying, I've never had a woman get on a roof with me before, and I've traveled to different districts. We have to say to our board members when they're interviewing, we're not afraid of the job that's at hand. So you're going to see women who have finance as their strong suit. You're going to see women who have curriculum and instruction as their strongest attribute. You're going to see women who can go in and out of all type of diverse communities without a problem. It's not just a man's world.
I'm going to go to another guest we have, Barbara Hewitt, spokesperson for the San Antonio Women in Technology Group. And Barbara, welcome to The Source.
Hi.
And so tell me about women in technology. Are there barriers there, I understand?
Yes. They start with just going to school. We have we realize that women make up about 53% or more of our college and university populations. However, the number of women that are actually going into technology fields is quite low. It's in the 20s. In most schools, 20% of that IT program, meaning that for every female in that program, there are four or five guys in that program as well. So it's a big challenge getting women to first decide to go into the field, and then to, after they get into the field, they're in a male-dominated field, which makes it quite challenging sometimes to stay in that field.
And so what needs to happen? What needs to change?
About the same things they're saying, and it's to, first of all, get more women in role model positions. So into those leadership positions and to the schools teaching women to become tech professionals or any STEM type of field, and then paying them. Pay equity is a huge issue. I was just reading that 63% of firms will offer women up to 50% less than their male counterparts when they're applying for a job. And this is still happening today. It's not 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago. It's still happening today. So it's getting them into the roles, getting strong leadership positions, showing that they can move up and everything, and then keeping them in those roles by showing them that they're worth, what their worth is.
Okay, I'm going to go to a caller. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about women in leadership locally in local government with Shirley Gonzalez. She's here, the District 5 City Councilwoman. Also, Sharon Ross with the Texas Council of Women in School Executives about talking about superintendents. And Barbara Hewitt is here talking about women in technology. Jason is on the line. And Jason, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I work in the construction field. And my wife has a legal degree. And for years when she was going to college, she worked at various makeup counters, Dillard's, and other places. And one point, it'll lead to my overall point, I don't see any women on my construction site. Welders, equipment operators, utility workers. And I've never seen a man working at the makeup counter. And I was on Cibolo City Council several years ago. And she hated it. My wife hated it that I was in politics. So I think it's just what we're interested in. So I think it's a bad idea to make it a requirement to have women on these boards, because if not enough women are interested, you're not going to get the participation. So you've really got to go, you've got to reach out to what people are interested in and, find people that are passionate about it, not just based on their gender.
Okay, Jason, thank you for the call. Appreciate your input. Let me go to Shirley Gonzalez from District 5.
I've seen a lot of men at the makeup counters. I've spent a lot of time at makeup counters. And so, Jason, I think that, if you spent more time at the makeup counters, you might see that difference. But to your point, yeah, of course that we need people to be interested. We wouldn't want to force somebody in a space where they don't belong. But the reality is many women are interested in construction. Many women are interested in technology. Many women want to be superintendents. But there are so many barriers that they will find themselves feeling like they're just banging their head against a wall. And so we need to open those. And many of the ways we do that are by networking, are by having a friendlier work environment. And part of the construction field may be that it is overwhelmingly male and therefore much more difficult to make your way in there. But we do have, for example, Julissa Carrillo, who's at the Master Center, who is one of the women in construction. And she's a great example of a woman who has broken through that and continues to do work in construction. And I can think of a couple of other women in that field as well that are excellent, especially in the higher in the foreman type positions where they're overseeing the contracts, not necessarily on the ground doing the work. And that's really what we're looking for, is women to be in leadership roles. There's no reason why a woman couldn't be the superintendent of a construction site. And we see that over and over again. So, but part of it is a woman feeling empowered to do so.
Let me go to Barbara Hewitt. Your response for that, since you deal in technology, and people make this similar argument about how young boys are more interested in computers, and this leads to a life working in tech and other things and coding and stuff. Can you argue mm-hmm. that against that?
Well, I got into coding because actually a young man introduced me to it. And I mean, we're talking many, many moons ago, but I think that we are stereotyped into thinking that women don't want to do it. Women also are afraid that they're going to be stuck behind a computer screen all day when they are in tech, and that's not what they want to do. But there are so many roles out there, so it's actually breaking that stereotype that needs to happen. And so that women realize that when I go into tech, I'm not going to be sitting at a desk all day behind a computer screen writing code. There are so many other jobs out there, including analysis and design, designing those systems, project management, managing those systems. And some actually enjoy coding. I loved coding until, you know, for a long time, that's what I wanted to do. So, but a lot of women don't. And so looking at it, that there are a lot of other jobs to do that getting, you know, and I even actually hear sometimes people telling women, well, you don't want to do that because you have to be good in math. And breaking that stereotype. Yes, if you're a computer scientist and you're programming a rocket to go to the moon, you have to be good in math. But if you're a computer information systems person and you're designing a system to meet a business's needs, the math level is a lot different. So breaking a lot of those stereotypes, I think, is very important.
So, Shirley Gonzalez, what's required to be on a city board? Like, anyone can apply, right?
Anyone can apply. There are very few boards and commissions that actually require a specific skill set. There are some, but many are just a willingness to volunteer and to be involved in your community. And most all of us can learn as we go. There are very few that require that specific skill set. So it's open and available to everyone.
And you would work through your city council person on that?
We primarily work through your city council person. I know that, you know, I like to have people serve on my boards and commissions that live in my district, but they don't have to. Others are also citywide boards and commissions. So there's lots of opportunities. And I had a workshop about 2 years ago of women that were interested in serving. And so that's another way that we can do it, is that we just have a list of women that we know that are interested, and then to call on them to circulate those names as positions become vacant.
I wonder if a lot of people, women and men, are skittish of applying for these city boards and commissions because they're concerned about how much time they're committing to. So maybe we can clear that up. We would be able to get a more applicants.
And most of them only meet once a month for about 2 hours. So there is not as much time commitment as one may think, but we do, and there's others that do require longer meeting times. Some are during the day and some in the evening. All those details can be worked out once the individual decides they want to serve.
Sure. And so, but anyone who's like wondering, I've always thought about doing that, but I never did because I didn't know what I'd be getting into. It's better to have some sort of determination now and explain it to them, saying, we're not going to devour your life.
And of course, the meetings are always open to the public. So a person can sit in if they would like to learn about a little bit about that particular commission and what they do. And hopefully they would then be interested and be willing to serve. But it's not usually a very long time commitment.
All right. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Got a lot of callers on the board. We'll get them on the air. We're talking about women in leadership here in San Antonio, in the city, on the superintendents and on our ISDs, and also in technology. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source is going to continue right after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Women are much less likely to be in leadership positions here in San Antonio. The leadership gender gap is pervasive in fields including but not limited to politics, education, business, and technology. Women hold only 38% of the seats available on city boards and commissions in San Antonio. What to do about that? We're talking about that this afternoon. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And Penny is on the line. And Penny, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I am glad to hear that you're explaining about how to get into and get the information for getting on boards in the government and all of that. I really called in to comment to the guy who said that he doesn't see women on job sites in construction. There are a lot of women out there, and there, in many ways, there is still a bit of the pervasive women don't belong on a job site. But a lot of people are starting to find out that, yes, we can. Yes, we have the abilities. We can learn the knowledge. We can learn the trades. And in many cases, women can be in much more dependable, even maybe more meticulous in some areas than many people are that you see. But NAWIC, which is the National Association of Women in Construction, really supports and helps our women in trades as well as women in construction companies in other aspects of it as well. So right. I just wanted to point that out and bring that up to everybody. Hey, you know, if your daughter really wants to do something but isn't sure, take her over to see the carpenters or electricians and see if she wants to join the trades.
Penny, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. So Penny says, you know, women in some areas can be more meticulous than men. I'm not comfortable with that type of characterization. You know, people are different, yet meticulous men, meticulous women. I mean, are you trying to make that argument, Shirley Gonzalez, that women are somehow better at some things than men are, and we need to recognize that? Or we just need to give everyone the opportunity, increase the talent pool as much as we can, and therefore benefit from everyone's abilities?
I think that's more accurate, at least in my opinion, because many of the fields that we're talking about are fields that are higher paying, that where we see that there is some
A bias,
especially in the technology fields. And so we know that women can do a wide range of things. So we don't want to limit. The requirement is just so that we open the door, because women then will most likely recruit other women, just like men most likely recruit other men. We tend to do what we're comfortable with, and we tend to advance people who we think are most like us. So having more women in leadership positions will just bring more women in leadership positions. And while that may sound simplistic, that's how we get there. And so that's the reason for the requirement on the CCR for the boards and commissions. Once we get women in leadership positions, we expect that they will bring others along.
So how would that work with this CCR? We put it up for a vote and the council votes on it, or is there more to it?
It could be that simple.
Okay, well, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, of course, I've been lobbying my colleagues and ensuring that we at least have 6 people to support. And so on the city council, we've got 11 members. You need 6 members to support almost any initiative. We have 3 women who we know are supportive, and our mayor is very supportive, of course, of women serving equally
as
well.
But it's one thing to say we ought to have 6, we ought to be 50-50 for women and men on every commission. We ought to, and we ought to try to shoot for that. And the other one is saying we absolutely have to have 50-50 on every commission. And so I don't know if there's people who are willing to sign on to one and not the other.
There should be a phased-in approach, because everybody who serves on a board and commission serves as a volunteer. And we're very grateful for their service and their willingness to participate in our local government. So every 2 years, people are reappointed. And so it would be in that scenario where we'd bring in new people.
Okay. Let's get another caller, and this is Kathy. And hey, Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling to say that there may be a very good reason that you don't have an equal percentage of women on these boards as you do in the society. And that's because many women, especially in this conservative area of the world, believe, as I do, that our primary job is that of wife and mother and homemaker. And I took it very seriously as my children were growing up and I was following my husband around the world in the military. I knew that I needed to be there for my children when they got home from school, when in the evenings when they were doing their homework and some of the other guys were out doing things they shouldn't have been doing. And so you don't have a pool of young mothers or mothers with young children. The pool begins once your kids either get in high school or graduate and go on. And so I think there's a very good reason that you just don't have the same many women applying for these jobs as you do men.
All right, Kathy, thank you for that. So let me go first to Sharon Ross, with the president of the Texas Council of Women School Executives, to respond to that.
Yes, I've had a lot of women who have expressed the same thoughts as the caller did with applying for different jobs. They want to wait until their children get out of school or such. But we've also had women such as myself and others who have said, you know what, the opportunity is here. And so you have to ask yourself, are you mobile enough to go to the other side of town or go to another part of the state or out of the state to work? In speaking of San Antonio and boards, I just want to encourage the women there to go to school board meetings and see what's required, because as Ms. Gonzalez said, most of the board requirements are meeting once a month, sometimes more when in the summer months you're working on budget. You may have to attend more than one board meeting, but certainly that will help when you're looking at biases and the fact that we tend to hire people who are like us or whatever. So if we expect to have more women at the seat in being a woman superintendent, we're going to have to make sure they understand the obligations, the time limits, things like that. And certainly I've seen women with small children juggle the job and be successful just as men who have small children at home can do.
So,
I think we don't need to make people feel like you're taking away from your home if you go out there and you become a woman school executive, whether it's on the school board or at the head of the district.
Is this a generational question, Shirley Gonzalez? You think that younger people aren't locked into those traditional gender roles that we heard from Kathy? And so maybe when we could help the new generation move into these new roles and find out about adopting these leadership positions outside of gender.
Well, and I just had a baby 5 months ago, and I've had two other children since I've been on the council. And I
think you look at Senator Duckworth.
That's right. She just had a baby and was the first then to change that rule that children were not allowed on the Senate floor. And so that's another thing that women in leadership positions could make those changes so that it's easier to integrate our families into our work lives as well. I think everybody will believe that family is our number one priority. But that can incorporate a lot of different things. And so just because, you know, our family is a priority doesn't mean that we can't serve. We need to find ways for men and women to bring their children to a workplace, making the environment more friendly to children. And having more women in leadership positions can start making those changes. So while I think that family has to be your number one priority, if your family is not doing well, you can't be a good public servant. But we need to start changing those conversations about how we take care of each other and how we take care of our families. And one of them could be so simple as providing childcare at meetings.
So my mother was on the City of San Antonio Planning and Zoning Commission for many, 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 many years when I was a kid. Seven kids. My father stepped up and made sure that we kids took care of ourselves, that we washed the dishes and washed our own clothes and made sure everything was done so that my mom could go do the other things that she thought were important. And what a better way to take care of your family than to make sure that the city had proper governance and that policies and things were being done in order to make sure that we had the best city that we could have. So there are lots of ways to be taking care of your family. Let me go to another caller, and this is Michelea. I'm sorry if I'm butchering. What am I saying?
That's Michaela.
Michaela, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. No, that's all right. So I am currently continuing my education, becoming an educator, and I'm sure lots of women are interested in becoming leaders in education. And I wanted to know if there were programs within San Antonio that have a support system for women who are continuing their education or wanting to continue teaching even with technology or something like that, that we could create a place where women support other women and create a good environment to succeed.
All right, Michaela, sorry about butchered your name there, my fault. And so Shirley Gonzalez? So,
one of the things that I'm very proud of is that with the partnership of UTSA and the La Trinidad Church that's right close to UTSA downtown campus, and with our new UTSA president, Dr. Taylor Amy, they were able to create a child care center at the church that's right close to the university. And that was primarily the move for the students. They wanted that and they asked for that, but it was the university and a member of my staff who worked together to find the right location, and we were able to provide childcare for the students that were taking night classes, which seemed to be one of the barriers for people not finishing their education. And it was, it took a lot of moving parts, but ultimately it was a very simple solution. And so we need to have opportunities like that one with UTSA and the church
All
Child
right.
Care Center.
Taking another break, and we'll be right back. Our phone lines, 210-614-8980. We'll get more callers on the air as we talk about women in leadership in San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about women in leadership. We got a tweet. This is from Christian. Black women have notoriously been left out of conversations. Organizations like Black Women's Leadership Alliance in San Antonio are preparing women for board seats and for C-suites. So corner office suites, I believe. So let's remember that. And remember that women of color also need to be a focus of this as well, Shirley.
That's right. And so I think that brings a very good point of women in color have also distinct needs. We're often coming from a place of greater disadvantage. And so having all of the pieces together to advance women is one of the barriers that we need to overcome. So I'm looking forward to having more initiatives and more conversations with women of color about what their priority is. And I do think it's important to mention situations are so unique. And so some of it does mean that we need to offer childcare. Other means that we need to just have empowerment and networking. But it would start with even simple appointments and giving more examples of women who are having children and serving in public office or having CEO positions. There's not that many, so then it's difficult to get an example of what that looks like.
And Sharon Ross at Texas Council of Women School Executives, do you think women of color have an even harder challenge ahead of them?
I do. And we've seen that with the numbers of African-American women superintendents as well as Hispanic superintendents in the state of Texas. And so I would welcome creating a voice for women with Ms. Gonzalez there in the area on behalf of Texas Council of Women School Executives, in which we do some type of forum or training session or something like that, so that we bring women to the table who are aspiring superintendents, aspiring assistant, or, you know, school leaders in particular, whatever it is, whether it's at the campus level or at the top level, because that is an area in which we have looked into. My dissertation was on women school leaders, school principals, the East Texas experience, and it was some of the barriers that I faced as an African-American woman in leadership. Also participating in someone's dissertation study, and her topic is African-American women superintendents. Where are you? So we want to see where the women of color are. Regardless as to which race it is, we see that there is not a high number represented across the state of Texas, and it's disturbing that in the San Antonio area, we're seeing that the majority of the superintendent are men. And you know, a study certainly could be done with board members included questioning the reasoning. Are they just not qualified? Are they just not coming to the table? Or what? So that we can prepare our future leaders.
Recognize the bias, whether it be unconscious or not, but able to identify that, we could try to work against it and provide more fairness across the board. Let me get Wendy in this conversation. And Wendy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I definitely think that there's a lot of implicit bias just across the board here. I'm someone who's relatively new to Texas. I've been in San Antonio for 3 years, but formerly from the East Coast. and I've never experienced the levels of implicit and explicit bias against women in the workplace. I find I work in the technology field. I work in higher ed, and I find that women who I work with, myself included, we take on more, we do more, we are functioning at a higher level than many of our male counterparts, and this is women of color included, and we are getting less credit. More is expected of us with less recognition, and it's completely accepted and completely normal. You know, I think we talk a lot about the family dynamics changing and needing to have child care at meetings. Yes, that's a part of it. And we definitely need to have more representation on boards. I mean, look at some of the boards of large companies, high tech companies here and in the higher ed institutions here. We are lacking in female representation, and especially female people of color representation. It has to start at a higher level than a grassroots. And I think trustees and boards really need to get on board with something that will decrease the levels of bias.
Wendy, thank you for the call. Barbara Hewitt with the San Antonio Women's Tech in Technology Group. Can you talk about bias and also about the standards that women face? Some say that women have to deal with tougher standards, higher standards. And then when people have that inevitable misstep, that they don't get a second chance.
I was going to say it's tough. And one of the things that I read that even made me think even further is women sometimes are our most critical audience, you know, and too. So not only are we being judged by our male counterparts, but sometimes we're being judged by other females. And so we have to be careful about that on both sides. And, bias, you know, is there on both sides. So there's a lot of challenges there.
Frequently, they say we should have just a data approach to qualifications, and so that someone who does the hiring in these fields, especially technology, because it's data-driven, that they don't even know the gender or the racial makeup of their candidates, and they just look at who's qualified. Should we do that in a more broader areas?
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely.
Okay, I'm going to go to another caller. This is Selena. And hi, Selena. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, how are you doing? So okay. I'm actually calling because I'm a president of the Junior League. And for those who don't know, we're an organization that's been around for almost 95 years. And our whole history is based on improving the community and developing women leaders. And we remain relevant because in leadership, we've seen that, you know, women tend to want to possess the skills before applying for leadership, whereas men have a tendency to apply with the comfort of knowing that they'll learn on the job. And, you know, we actually run programs specifically for training women and men to serve on nonprofit boards. And, you know, while we have our volunteers who essentially run our organization, including our finances, our community programs, our recruitment, and then many of them also serve on other nonprofit boards, corporate boards, and city commissions. We have to constantly survey them, though, to ensure that they can create that balance for themselves and create those priorities for themselves that allow them to still be mothers, professionals, students, and leaders. And, you know, as for myself, on a personal note, I'm the mother of two young children. They're 3 and 7 years old. And my own mother, she's been an owner of her own construction business for nearly 20 years. And if that's to say anything, it's that we have to be the example for other women that we want to see taking on leadership roles. And so, you know, for anyone who is looking for that opportunity to learn on the job in a space that is inclusive of all women and who are actively looking for opportunities to serve, I can say the Junior League has been absolutely life-changing for me in that regard.
Selena, thank you for the call. So Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 City Councilwoman, are you saying recruit? Is that the keys for this?
It is the key. And I thought about the Junior League as I was preparing for our conversation today about really what organizations are actively promoting women. And I think the Junior League is one of them. So recruiting is so critical because we talk about having to meet people where they are. And I've heard, of course, in the halls of City Hall about conversations that take place. And I know that many of them take place over cocktails after hours.
Or on a golf course.
Well, I don't hear the golf course story anymore, but, you know, perhaps it still exists. I think times are changing. But anyway.
Well, I don't play golf. I don't drink.
I don't know anybody who plays golf anymore, but I know that that does happen. But I do hear some after hours. And I know I cannot attend something after hours. I can't go out for a drink. And so we have to make those things happen at different times. And I know some of it would be recruiting, you know, our moms at our, you know, soccer games, at our t-ball games, at our places where other children are. And we know that we have many women in our city who prioritize their family but still have an incredible desire to serve. And so that's, I think, where we start doing the networking and just doing it differently than we have done it in the past, by meeting over coffee in the morning or meeting after school in, you know, even at the school, instead of having to go to another location, so we don't have to worry about what happens to our children during those times where we're still trying to get work done. And advertising on mom blogs, advertising in local websites where we know that we see a lot of professional women.
And Sharon Ross, Texas Council of Women School Executives, what do you think needs to change right now?
Right now, the biases need to change. And I think if we can get more women understanding that they need to network with TCWSE, with TABSE, the Texas Association of Black School Educators, TALUS, the Texas Association of Latino Administrators, with TASA, TASB, the Mexican American Black Caucus Board members, the African American Black Caucus Board members, organizations, those things. Connect yourself with organizations who are advocating for women leaders, because we have right now in the state of Texas, the Texas Superintendent of the Year is an African-American woman, Dr. LaTanya Goffney, and her story is the ultimate story of a woman who can take care of her family, her special needs child, regular ed student, her child without any needs at all, who is a pastor's wife.
Wow, that's a great story. Sharon Ross, I want to thank you so much. We're out of time. Appreciate you participating in our conversation. She's the president of the Texas Council of Women School Executives and a retired superintendent also. Barbara Hewitt is with us, spokesperson for the San Antonio Women in Technology Group. Shirley Gonzalez, District 5, City Councilwoman. You say apply, apply, apply.
That's right. And for the rest of us, recruit, recruit, recruit.
All right. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.